Unfortunately, my cell phone battery died, so I can't set an alarm for myself. Thank you. Okay, so I'm Rebecca Brown. I am from the University of Rhode Island, so rather a different production system than we've heard about previously. And I'm going to be talking about integration of cover crops into our system. So for those of you who don't know much about Rhode Island, all of our production is direct retail into local markets, and Rhode Island is entirely peri-urban and urban. We don't have any rural land. And that's actually true for most of southern New England. It's also a relatively small area. The entire area of southern New England would fit on this big island, okay? It is a moderate, temperate, mesic, maritime climate. What does this mean? It means our weather varies all over the place. Wait 10 minutes, it'll be completely different. It varies year to year enormously. We have an April to October growing season. Our fall tends to be very long and very mild because the ocean heats up and everything stays warm. Spring, on the other hand, all bets are off. Our farms are mostly very small, with about 5% larger farms of 70 to 500 acres. But most of the farmers I work with are growing on fewer than 5 acres. And our land values are some of the highest in the nation because all of our farms compete with housing for land usage. We have essentially no production of grains or intensively managed forage. So this really impacts our alternatives because there's no way to turn a cover crop into a cash crop. It also means that things like straw are essentially unavailable for our growers because we have no grain production. Our soils are silt loams to sand. For those of you who were paying attention this morning and are into soil science, we're on podosols, glacial deposits. We have minimal clay and generally less than 5% organic matter. So we have really been pushing with all our growers, not just our organic growers, cover crop, cover crop, cover crop, to try to get the organic matter up in these soils. Okay. So what are we looking for from these cover crops specifically? These are summer cover crops, so we are looking for suppression of weed growth on land that's not currently being cropped, cash cropped. We are looking to improve our soil organic matter, and we are looking to retain nutrients in the topsoil. We get about 20 centimeters of rain every month of the year, okay? So if you don't have a crop growing in a field in the summer, that organic matter is being mineralized, the nitrogen is disappearing. And it all goes into the bay, and nitrogen plus marine ecosystems is bad. So we have a window of opportunity in our cropping system between spring and fall of 6 to 8 weeks, where fields are sometimes left fallow and where we could fit in a high biomass cover crop. One of the things I should mention is that because our production season runs from April to December, it's very hard for us to get biomass off of winter cover crops. They tend to be planted way too late and terminated way too early. So even though our farmers use winter cover crops, they're not really contributing to soil organic matter. So we looked at two summer grasses, teff, Aragrostis teff, which is a summer annual from the highlands of East Africa. And this is important because while teff is tropical, it's high altitude tropical. So it doesn't need a lot of heat. And heat is something we don't have. And then we looked at Japanese millet, which is a domesticated form of barnyard grass. It's originally from Japan, and it is an extremely good nitrogen scavenger. I have planted it in fields that were just rotating out of sod production. The sod producers are really messy. They leave scraps of sod all over the surface. We'd till that in, plant Japanese millet, you could see where every single scrap of sod had been, just because the extra nitrogen in that sod translated into extra growth in the millet. It's that efficient. Okay, so we did two experiments to basically figure out how our growers should use these cover crops. The first was seeding rate. We were trying to identify the seeding rate that was best for cover crop purposes. And so we looked at four rates, four replications, a single date. So we seeded teff on June 18th. The millet was seeded on June 19th. 21 degrees Celsius for the soil temperature at 5 centimeters, and we seeded with a Brillion cultipacker. This shows the data that we collected, basically looking at crop and weed biomass. And here's what we got. So for establishment with teff, we had significantly more seedlings at the highest rate, but below that it didn't make any difference. With Japanese millet, each increase in seeding rate translated to an increased number of seedlings. Now you should be aware with teff, teff seed is extremely tiny. The seed that we used had a coating that accounts for 50% of the weight of the seed, and it's still so tiny that you can barely count them. So at 7.7 kilograms per hectare, you know, we're getting 3,000 seedlings per meter, per square meter. Okay, it's just a huge number of seedlings because the seed is so small. Okay, but what we really care about is not the number of seedlings, but the amount of biomass. And what we found in teff is that there were no significant differences except that for some reason that I think was just chance, even though it's statistically significant, we had less biomass production in the 9.4 kilograms per hectare seeding rate than in any of the others. I can't find a logical explanation for it. And we also found that, again, except at that seeding rate, the weed biomass was negligible. So teff is doing a really good job of suppressing the weeds. Japanese millet, again, biomass increases with seeding rate. And at 8 weeks, 48 kilograms per hectare gave the best results. If you're willing to wait and leave your crop in place for 10 weeks, actually 33 kilograms per hectare does just as well. Basically, with the higher seeding rate, you have so much biomass that it doesn't really increase in those extra 2 weeks, whereas at the slightly lower rate, it does. You do get better weed suppression at 48 kilograms per hectare because of that high number of seedlings. Okay, so that was a single seeding date when the soil was at optimal temperature. What we really wanted to see was how much of a window do our growers have for putting these things in? Because your spring crops may not be out by the middle of June. You know, 1 year to the next, you never know. So we planted every 2 weeks in 2015 and 2016, and actually the data's not in here, but we did the millet in 2017 as well. For teff, we went with 13 kilograms per hectare. This was basically because the lower values with our Brillion are very difficult, so we wound up with 13 kilograms per hectare. The Japanese millet, we had 24 kilograms per hectare in 2015, only half that in 2016 because my technician forgot that we'd been doing two passes on every plot. And basically, we collected crop biomass, weed biomass. So what did we find out? With teff, basically, if you seed between June 15th and July 15th, you get the best results. Okay? And we found this in both years. Earlier, later, not so good. Japanese millet, we found that biomass production in Japanese millet is incredibly affected by soil quality. So our variability within plot is huge. Okay, just the slightest differences in soil quality make these huge differences in biomass production. That's part of why we repeated the study this year using a larger sampling quadrat. The other thing that was interesting, and I think it's part of this whole soil quality issue, is that in 2016, we had half the number of seeds going down, but we got a lot more biomass, even though we had reduced the seeding rate. And I think it was just because it was a different field. It had better soil quality. We also had a dry year, which may have increased the amount of nitrogen that stayed in the root zone. But it's just really variable. That said, we again get better results seeding in June and July than in May or August. So, why is this? What's wrong with May and August? May, the issue is soil temperature. Basically, what we found is for both of these crops, if your soil temperature isn't at least 21 degrees Celsius, you're wasting your time putting the seed in the ground. It'll come up, it'll establish, but the weeds establish so much faster that you don't get good crop, good weed suppression, and you don't get good crop biomass. This is very important because for us, year to year, the date on which our soils reach that temperature can vary by as much as a month. So we're really trying to get the growers to watch the soil temperature on this one. Now, in August, the soil temperature is great. That's not the issue. The problem there is that our day length drops to 14 hours on August 11th. And at that point, we start to get into conditions that induce flowering in both of these crops, and especially the Japanese millet. It has a profound effect. The stuff simply stops increasing biomass, and it starts producing seed. So you can plant, say, July 15th and July 30th, both of those will start flowering on the same date, and the July 30th planting, having had 2 weeks fewer to grow vegetatively, will be significantly shorter. I mean, you can see it with the naked eye, shorter. In August, you see it in August, the stuff flowers at 6 inches. Okay, so these are basically our conclusions. You do need a lot of nitrogen in the soil with Japanese millet for your best results. TEF produces less biomass than Japanese millet, but is extremely good at suppressing weeds. And we've actually been using it a lot, as in this picture, so between rows, because it can handle foot traffic, it can handle limited vehicle traffic, and unlike Japanese millet, where you sort of have to wade through it, you can easily walk through the TEF if you need to. And the pumpkins just grow right over the top. So I just want to acknowledge my field workers, Tim Sherman and Gabrielle Torfey, and our funding, which primarily came from an NRCS CIG grant. And it looks like I don't have any time for questions, but I will be around the entire conference. You can catch me and ask.